Sergeant and Mrs. Smith, you're going to love this house.
Is that a tub in the kitchen?
There's no field manual for finding the right home. But when you do, USAA Homeowners Insurance can help protect it the right way. Restrictions apply.
Thanks for listening to the Toronto Legends podcast, powered by the Henderson Brewing Company, a locally owned, award-winning neighborhood brewery that celebrates Toronto's stories and culture. I'm your host, Andrew Applebaum. My guest today is Chris Tait. Chris is the lead singer and co-founder of Chalk Circle, and if you're a fan of the 80s, you are a fan of Chalk Circle, the alternative techno-pop rock band formed in 1982 in Newcastle, just east of Toronto. The band originally consisted of my guest today, lead singer and guitarist Chris Tait, bassist Brad Hopkins, drummer Derek Murphy, and keyboardist Tad Winklars. Only one change to your lineup card since then, with Jason Snyderman coming on to play keyboards since 2011. Solid national radio and video airplay in the mid-80s led to huge success for Chalk Circle, featuring songs including April Fool. No. Morning. Me, myself, and I. And the T-Rex classic, 20th Century Boy. Although the band disbanded in 1990, the 2006 release of a Best of Chalk Circle album inspired them to play a reunion show to a sold-out crowd at Lee's Palace, and ever since they have popped up now and again to resume playing together. We will find out exactly what is up with Chalk Circle today, directly from Mr. Tait. Welcome, Chris, to Toronto Legends. Thank you for joining me. Where are you and how are you?
I am here at home in my basement studio, and I'm great. Thanks for asking, Andrew.
Excellent. Well, if I can go sideways for a moment, this being the Toronto Legends podcast, I would like to recognize the 2022 Grey Cup champion Toronto Argonauts after a wild 24-23 victory over the Winnipeg Blue Bombers in Regina.
What an extraordinary finish here at Mosaic Stadium. The dynasty is denied, and one of the oldest trophies in Canada's history will go to one of its oldest franchises. The Toronto Argonauts have won the 2022 Grey Cup.
A late interception, face mask penalty, not one but two blocked field goal attempts. Bills legendary quarterback Jim Kelly's nephew Chad coming off the bench to lead what would be the game-winning drive. This game had it all. On behalf of the entire staff here at the podcast, we congratulate Argos coach Ryan Dinwiddie and general manager Pinball Clemens. Argos! Chris, Woo-hoo. Are you a fan of the Argos? Any memories to share?
The Argos have been around so long. I mean, that's every football season as a kid. That's all I remember. I mean, it was we didn't play football when we were kids, except for touch football sort of after school and stuff, but it was all soccer and hockey. But football was on television. Absolutely. Great Cup every year.
I think the young people today wouldn't even believe you and I when we say that I used to go to games at Exhibition Stadium, and there were more people at those games than at Leaf games, or, you know, the Raptors, of course, didn't exist. It was the big game.
Absolutely. Yeah. It was football and hockey. That was it. Yeah. No TFC, no Raptors, nothing else. Yeah.
Let's start with current day Chris Tait and Chalk Circle. What is your status and what is the band's status?
Oh, status. Happy, living life. grateful for family. The band status, We're doing well. We were actually supposed to play three shows with The Box. Really looking forward to it. This, our friends, the band The Box from Montreal, and had to cancel recently, unfortunately. But we're looking forward to playing next year and hoping to get out quite a bit, doing a lot of live shows next year.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to go all the way back. Get the Chris Tate story. Where were you born? And please describe your upbringing.
Born in lovely Barrie, Ontario. Raised in Newcastle, Ontario, which is probably from about the age of two. My parents moved there. And Newcastle's small town, about an hour east of Toronto. I mean, you know, play road hockey every night until the lights come on. Bike, get on your bike and leave and summer breaks and ride down to Waltona Park and go swimming all day. I mean, it was pretty idyllic, you know, lots of friends.
Do you have siblings, and what did your parents do?
Yeah, two brothers. I still have two brothers. And mom was a nurse. Dad worked primarily in the trucking business. He drove truck for quite a while, and he was a dispatcher for a trucking company. It was probably his longest gig, yeah.
And you got into music how? And I guess it was 1982 the start? Why don't you tell us?
So where we grew up, there wasn't a lot of musical influence other than we had sort of access to rock radio. But in my house, I was the oldest, so I didn't have an older brother or sister to sort of, you know, teach me about rock music. And in my house, it was my parents listening to, my dad loved sort of big band music like Glenn Miller and stuff like that. And they listened to either CFRB or, which I think at the time was sort of like oldies radio. So I didn't really, apart from that and you know, the Bay City Rollers on TV.
Yeah.
That was sort of it. And then in grade six, I had a grade six homeroom teacher who had this music elective after school, and a few kids would come after school and he would play records, and we had our own little big, not little, but big, huge headphones with a curly cord, and we would listen to, he was indoctrinating us. He was playing us Rush and Led Zeppelin and Procol Harum and all of this prog rock music, which was like mind-blowing and just opened my eyes, and I was hooked. When, you know, I was hooked. So that year I asked my parents for a guitar for my birthday, and they got me an acoustic guitar, crappy acoustic guitar, which I deserved because I couldn't play.
Yeah.
I quickly saved up money and got a crappy electric guitar, and yeah. And I have been in my basement practicing guitar ever since.
And the first band you were in, is this correct? The Casualties.
Yeah, so Chalk Circle was a high school band, and we had different names. So the Casualties was a one-off, a band that did a show. I think this is right. This is where maybe Brad should have done this interview, because I'm pretty bad at these details, but I believe this is correct. The Casualties was the name of our band for a Christmas assembly, and I played drums. Brad, our bass player, played guitar. We had a different keyboard, we didn't have a keyboard player. We had a different bass player. And our singer was Stani Veselinovich, who is my buddy who came over from Germany. We sort of hit it off. We were best friends. He introduced me to a lot of new music coming out of the UK and stuff. Anyway, yeah, we played Come On Everybody by Eddie Cochran. We played God Save the Queen. We played something, I can't remember what else. But yeah, I think Brad was grounded by his parents when they found out that we played God Save the Queen at the Christmas assembly.
That's very alternative of you.
that was our very first gig, and it was, you know, it was a riot. It was nuts. Yeah, new Clark High School assembly went crazy, so Christmas assembly went nuts, and yeah.
And then you had a few iterations, the Reactors, New Edition, and you finally settled on the name Chalk Circle. Where'd you come up with this name?
So this was Stani's, I mentioned Stani Veselinovich. This was his idea. He introduced us to Bertolt Brecht, and we stole the name from a Bertolt Brecht play, which was the Caucasian Chalk Circle. So we just got rid of the white guy part and yeah, and ended up with Chalk Circle. Yeah.
And what brought you, Chris, over to Toronto? Did you what point did you move to Toronto?
Well, in Newcastle, you could you could play the odd outdoor sort of party. I'm not kidding, with the hay bales and on a trailer with a rented PA. That was kind of it, you know. So the only way to play or perform for people was to move to Toronto. And by the time, you know, I was 2 years younger than the other guys. So by the time I was in grade 12, the other guys had graduated and we were already playing. We were playing Toronto when I was in grade 11, I think. We would play the Beverly Tavern. We'd do Thursday, Friday, Saturday. We'd drive to Toronto on Thursday, do soundcheck, do the show, pack up, drive home, go to school, drive to Toronto, play Friday, do the same thing Saturday. So, but we... The only reason we knew that we could do that is all of a sudden we were able to listen to the radio station CFNY, which was at the time only playing like alternative music, which we were like eating up like, you know, crazy. And we were introduced to all of these local Toronto bands because they would play bands that had their own recordings, you know, that weren't signed to a label. So it gave us permission to write songs and record on our own and just go and play for people. And that's what we did.
Yeah. And this all, I guess, started off with you independently recording two demo singles on a cassette. Yes, a cassette.
Oh, yeah.
And you subsequently won the Most Promising Unsigned Band CASBY Award in 1985. Talk about the process of kind of jumping into record independently these demo singles.
Well, we had done a lot of recording. You mentioned the first iteration of Chalk Circle was just the three of us, Brad and Derek and myself. And we recorded a 5-song EP, and that was the band The Reactors. We recorded a 5-song EP at Quest Studios in Oshawa and peddled that for a couple of years. And then as the band developed and when Tad joined the band, we continued to record. I think the cassette single you're talking about had a song called The World and a song called Black Pit on it. I think it's that one. Yeah, we just, you know, you just did it on your own then. There was no, you weren't really concerned about getting a record deal. You just wanted to record and sell cassettes off the stage, which is what we did. So,
And on that note, you signed to Toronto indie label Duke Street Records, who released your debut, a 6-song EP called The Great Lake. How'd you end up with Duke Street Records?
So, like all other Toronto bands, we were playing clubs and doing quite well. And different A&R directors from labels would come out to shows because we had a bit of a buzz. And we would meet with them or they would, you know, they would come backstage after the show and talk to us. And all we would get is, you guys are awesome. I think you're amazing. You just need some more songs. Or you guys are great. The songs are great, but you need to work on your live show. There was always a but. And, I mean, we just always recorded on our own. And so we just went, well, we're not waiting around. So that EP was actually recorded independently with a personal loan. From a crazy man named Rob Sandolowicz, who was Blue Peter's sound technician, and he believed in us. Blue Peter's guitar player, Chris Wardman, was producing the record, and Blue Peter's lighting technician, Chris Pegg, was our manager at the time. So we just went to Quest Studios, where we grew up in Oshawa, Ontario, and recorded that EP. And I think what happened is Duke Street heard it in progress and went, oh, wait a minute, this is really good, and gave us a shorthand sort of deal memo and said, we want to sign you. We'll work out the details later. And so we went, oh, okay, great. And we finished, and we actually mixed the record at their studio, Mantis Studios, and that was it. It all sort of happened very quickly. And of course, after word got out that this record was around, I guess there was a bit of buzz, the phone started ringing from other, you know, bigger labels that said, hey, you know, do you guys want to talk? And we felt sort of a loyalty to Duke Street because they put their hand up first. So,
well, it's quite interesting what happened next, Chris, because at this time, the debut release, 1986, your debut single, April Fool, had yet to be released. You all piled into a van to head west. And I guess while you were in transit and on tour, as you mentioned, CFNY, big supporter, they played a major role in breaking April Fool. The track was being played everywhere. The video was being played on Much Music. And what happened from the time you piled into your van and drove and kind of by the time you got going, things changed dramatically, didn't they?
Yeah, it was pretty surreal. We were in a baby band on an independent label in an extended four van with the four of us, you know, our manager slash lighting designer and our sound man slash driver, Ike Zimbel, who is a lovely guy, very talented. Yeah, we got in the van and headed west, and it was amazing. It was the best. It was our dream. You know, we wanted to play music and tour, and on the way out, we played to no one because who the hell are you? And you know, certainly we were known in Toronto, but anywhere east or west of Toronto, no one knew who we were. But what was happening was the video was taking off, I think, on Much Music. And the song was taking off at radio. And so by the time we sort of played a lot of the same clubs on the way back east from Vancouver. And by the time we came back, like 2 weeks later, the places were actually full. So it was crazy. We're like, oh, this is easy. You know, we must have been so good. We just word spread and we were so amazing. No. So it was pretty awesome. Very lucky. Nobody expected it. Nobody at the label expected it, but very lucky.
Well, what a dramatic change. It must have been so exciting for you guys. The lead single, April Fool, became a hit single in Canada, along with another single, Me, Myself, and I. The band produced videos for both tracks, as we just talked. It regularly featured on Much Music. This EP went on to become Duke Street's biggest seller at that time. You were nominated for Most Promising New Group at the 1986 Juno Awards. Suddenly you had major record companies pitching you, but you stayed with Duke Street. Was this contractual or out of loyalty or some kind of mix?
Oh, it was contractual. No. There's no loyalty in music, Andrew.
Yeah.
No. Yeah, it's very contractual. Yeah. Yeah.
Chris, what do you remember about being at the 1986 Juno Awards? Did you attend? And what do you remember about that whole time when you were up for this nomination as Most Promising New Group?
Yeah, we did. Absolutely. I'd like to say that it was an honor. In retrospect, it was an absolute honor. But I didn't enjoy it, I don't think, at the time. I mean, we were young kids and we came out of this sort of punk rock do-it-yourself. We're all friends with all the bands in Toronto who apparently we're competing with. So it just seemed like an absurd thing, these award shows, which of course, I mean, even CFNY had their own award show before the Junos called the Unos. And then I think it turned out it became the Casbys. And we all felt weird. I wish I'd enjoyed it more. I think I was on guard and young and naive and a bit dumb, but you know, in retrospect, I mean, to be nominated for a Juno Award means you must have done something well, you know.
Absolutely.
It's good. So yeah,
and I hope you enjoyed it a little. Do you remember interacting with anyone back then, 1986, that kind of you look back on now? It's kind of interesting.
Yeah, it was at, I'm trying to remember where it was. I mean, I'm sure it was fun and great and we had a good time. You know, it was just a bit uncomfortable. But yeah, it's sort of a strange thing. You're there and there, everyone you've ever read about or seen on television is just standing there, you know, every Canadian rock star. So it was pretty overwhelming, I think. Yeah.
Now, you released subsequently two more albums on Duke Street, The Mending Wall, As the Crow Flies. But is it accurate to say that in the end, it was the contract that led to the band's demise?
Well, yes and no. We signed a record deal, like every Canadian artist signed a record deal. They're, you know, very tough. If you had, even if you had a lot of, I mean, we've heard stories for years. I mean, you know, Neil Young was sued by his own record company at one point for not making commercial enough music. I mean, it's an absurd business and the deals can be onerous. But the other thing that was happening is our label was falling apart. So That was more of a frustration, and that was probably more of it. By the time, you know, we'd finished promoting the As the Crow Flies record, there was really just the label sort of president and his executive director or executive assistant. There were no staff left, and we had contractually, I think we were obligated to deliver 7 more records. I mean, it was crazy. So, you know, and the amount of energy it was just, it's a lot of work and just sort of felt trapped, I think. So for me personally, you know, it became sort of, I just couldn't imagine making another record. It was just putting that much, you know, energy and heart and soul into it and literally making no money, like no money. You know, we made money playing live. At that age, it wasn't even that big a deal because we didn't care. As long as you could pay the rent, we were successful, you know, we were really happy about it. But yeah, that was sort of the straw that broke the camel's back for me, I think.
Well, the technical description was creative differences, chalk circle disbands. in 1990. Yeah. Yeah. And Chris, you went on to form the indie band Big Faith. How long did you kind of wait? Like, were you eager to get going again, or did you want a little break from music? Or what was your mindset in 1990 when Chalk Circle disbanded?
I didn't know what I wanted to do musically. I knew I didn't want to record for Duke Street. So if that was my only option, then I would just do something else. Because to me, there was no point. We'd experienced what was happening when the label was falling apart, because for example, on the As the Crow Flies record, just to step backwards for a second, the last video and single happened because I went to my bank and got a bank loan to make a video. That's the only reason that video happened. The label wouldn't promote us anymore, so we just went back to what we'd always done. We just did it ourselves. But then when the dust settles, you're like, oh, we're stuck, you know? Anyway, so I wasn't sure, but Fergus Marsh, my dear friend Fergus Marsh, and I had been writing songs just on the side and had been hanging out and doing stuff musically already for quite a few years. I met Ferg, I think before Chalk Circle had a deal. We met at the Rivoli years and years ago, and we had written a few songs together. So we were just sort of hanging out and writing songs, and enough dust had settled that I just thought, well, we'll just make a record, or we'll just keep this going. So originally it was Ferg and his brother Hugh, who I knew quite well because he was a label mate and we'd played together and toured together with Chalk Circle, and Michael White, this amazing trumpet player, and Mike Slosky. Fergus and Mike were Bruce Coburn's rhythm section for a number of years. So, yeah. So that's how that sort of started, but pretty organically.
And then something interesting happened when you fast forward to 2006. Universal Music Group bought out Duke Street's catalog, and they released a Chalk Circle Greatest Hits album. Did you have any input in this, any involvement? Like, how does that work? Did they ask for your permission, or this kind of, they go and do it?
Well, they didn't buy it out. Universal was Duke Street's distributor. So they put together this 20th Century Masters series, I think they called it, and approached Duke Street or us to do it. I know they approached us, and we're like, wow, yeah, that would be great. So, and friends there, you know, they were very supportive of us musically. So it was a great opportunity. We really hadn't talked or gotten together as individuals before that. And since the band had split up. So it was a really beautiful thing to see everyone again and get together. And we decided to do a show at the Lee's Palace. It's the first time we'd played since I left the band. And Chris Wardman came in and helped sort of remaster all the songs with Joe at Carvalho. And it was a great, great experience. Yeah.
Well, and it was a sold-out show at Lee's Palace, so it must have made you feel great to be with the boys again and get it going.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. Yeah, absolutely.
5 years later, in 2011, for the 40th anniversary of the Juno Awards, the band was prompted to do it again. This was an 80s celebration event at the Horseshoe Tavern, and you had Jason Snyderman come on to play keyboards. What do you remember about that show and kind of what prompted you 5 years after this initial Leafs Palace reunion to play again?
We were asked.
That's a good reason.
That was kind of it. And, you know, it was a pretty, you know, we're quite honored to be asked to participate in that. And Blue Peter were playing as well. And Jason was always kind of a fifth Beatle. Like, he was always in the studio and a lot of involved in all of our recordings. So because Jason was on stage and he's like, hey, I'll play keys with you guys. And I'm like, great. So that was another amazing thing about that is Jason's, I mean, yeah, he's incredible, a really talented guy and a beautiful human. And so it just clicked perfectly. And yeah, I think we did three songs or something. It was a riot. It was great.
And Jason is, if I'm not mistaken, the son of Sam Snyderman, Sam the Record Man.
Yes, the son of Sam, of course.
Son of Sam.
Yes. Yes, exactly. Yeah. Jason ran Roblin's and yeah, he was very involved in the business for years. Yeah.
Since that performance, you had a few reunion appearances, but something significant happened in conjunction with none other than the Prime Minister of Canada, Justin Trudeau. How did this have a resurgence again for Chalk Circle? He put out of course, the world had changed so much, and now we wanted to know everyone's Spotify playlist.
Oh, that's right.
Prime Minister Trudeau published his summer Spotify playlist. Your hit, Me, Myself, and I, was introduced to new audiences. What was the feedback from that? Suddenly the Prime Minister's in your fan club.
I think the feedback was like any sort of social media feedback. It was really intense for about 30 seconds.
Yeah.
That was it. Yeah.
Well, that was it.
Like, there was
that was the spike.
We didn't have a party or anything. It's like, oh, that's kind of cool. Well, that was kind of it. Yeah.
It's nice to know you got Justin in your camp.
Yeah.
Now,
although we can't travel west of Winnipeg now. So,
okay, that's true. Yeah. Now, we talked a little about the status of Chalk Circle today. Are you creating new music? And if so, how do you mix your set list classics with new material? Or do you prefer to play the classics?
You know what? We haven't written or recorded anything new. Although, personally, for the first time in forever, I would love to write some music and do some recording. I'm hoping that's something we can do for 2023. It just hasn't been in the cards. Everyone, you know, we all have very busy lives and so playing the really wonderful thing about playing shows with the band over the last few years is it is just so much fun. And it's what it was like when we started. That's why we did it. It was just a riot to play and to perform and really satisfying musically to play those songs again and to know that you can play those songs again. But yeah, it would be great to see what happens and try recording. I don't know. I don't know what we'll come up with. If it's something that we think is really, really great, then we'll do it. But I don't think we want to do anything that's not really great, that we don't think is really great. It's like, you know, it's been a long time for us. I've always written and recorded on my own, and the other guys have been busy, and Jason has a really amazing project that he's been doing the last few years, a solo project. But yeah, we'll see. You know, we have some shows booked. Maybe one of those shows will be debuting a couple of new songs. So,
well, yeah. That would be great. Hey, Toronto, a West Coast IPA is a great idea when the days are getting shorter and the air a bit colder. Take in the aromas of brown sugar and savor the blend of pine, citrus, and earthy cereal in Henderson Brewing's Escape Art West Coast IPA. Available now at their tap room and retail store at 128A Sterling Road along the West Toronto Rail Path, or order now at hendersonbrewing.com. Henderson Brewing and the Toronto Legends Podcast, a great local partnership. I wonder, Chris, if you're comfortable riding the 80s nostalgia wave. I guess, are you open to touring under a banner of, you know, hits of the 80s as opposed to a Chalk Circle show? How do you feel about that? Because you're so closely associated with a very specific period of Canadian music.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess it really, I mean, for us, there are simple criteria to doing a show. Will we lose money? No? Okay, good. Will it be fun? Yes. Is it sort of low pressure? You know, is it going to be low stress? And that, you know, not that it's not, you know, something that you work hard for, but I mean, just are my kids playing hockey that night? You know, I mean, it's simple things. So usually that's the criteria, and then it's no, check, check, check. Okay, good. Let's play. Let's do it.
Yeah.
So, whether it's I don't even know what that would look like, but yeah.
Well, when I think of your, we
would still be chalk circle, I suppose.
Yeah,
but, yeah,
for sure. But
yeah,
I think when I think of your contemporaries, I think of the Box, Glass Tiger, Blue Peter, Martha and the Muffins, Platinum Blonde, Honeymoon Suite. You know, to me as a fan of that period and growing up in that period, I'd love to see a dream concert with all of you. How closely did you work with your contemporaries? Do you keep in touch with any of them, or kind of were you in your own silo when you were busy?
Our contemporaries would have been, I guess, bands of similar genres or whatever that means. But it's funny, we always, like all of the friends I grew up with musically, like Andrew Cash at the time and even the guys in Breeding Ground and all of the local bands were still our friends, the friends we hung out with, you know, like I'm trying to think apart from, I mean, Blue Peter were just our friends. We used to play with them all the time back before we were signed. We used to open up for them. So, you know, we would hang out with them, with some of the guys in Blue Peter, Jason and Chris, I guess, primarily. And I'm trying to think of, you know, I remember traveling out west at one point and meeting Brian Potvin, who was in the Northern Pikes. And I think they were just about to release their first record. And we sort of connected with Brian and we were kind of pretty chummy for a while. But it was a different time, you know, if you wanted to connect with someone, you know, from Saskatoon, it's pretty difficult.
Yeah.
Your time zone and a phone. There's no internet. So, yeah.
There wasn't a lot of Facebook back then.
No. Yeah.
But Chris, I wonder for you, you know, 80s weekends are a staple of Boom 97.3 and other stations. Mm-hmm. It must be kind of gratifying for you. You're driving around in your car and I can guarantee you, you're going to hear a Chalk Circle song.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of nostalgia on radio today. You know, it's like 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, 2000s is nostalgic now. It's nice. It's nice to be included on any playlist anywhere, right? The opposite is not nearly as enjoyable.
Nope. You know,
silence is not golden.
It is not. You're making music.
Yeah.
I have to ask you for some good stories, Chris. You've toured with some very interesting bands. You toured with Rush.
Oh yeah, that was absolute joy. Yeah, really beautiful people, pros, classy, everything. Yeah. Let's see. What can I think of? I have a great Rush story.
Please.
A seasoned rock band with really modern equipment and, you know, the latest and greatest in technology, and opening for them is Chalk Circle, who were the opposite of that. And one night, I think Getty said, he saw us play and he said, hey, you guys, we have all these extra wireless rigs. Do you guys want to go wireless? You know, you're kind of stuck at the front of the stage with your little guitar cable stuck to your little Fender Deluxe amp. Like, you can go wireless. And we're like, really? He's like, yeah. I think at one point he even restrung one of his basses back upside down so that Brad could try his bass, because Brad's left-handed.
Huh.
They were incredibly generous to work with. So we strapped on our wireless gear, never been wireless before, and we ran around like freaking idiots. And it was the worst show on the entire tour. I was so far away from the microphone half the time. I would be late to, I would miss choruses and I would miss verses because I just went, we went crazy. It was ridiculous. So we gave them back immediately after and went back to our plugs. Yeah.
Too much freedom.
Too much freedom. Yeah. Too much too soon. Yeah.
How about Crowded House, Chris? What do you remember about touring with them?
Again, I think we were just incredibly fortunate. Another really wonderful group of people, really down to earth, nicest guys you'd ever want to, you know, chat to or sit down or meet. And the same thing. We were just treated really, really, really well. And we got on like a house on fire. They'd been on the road for a long time. So they had to go. I think this was their second or third time out on that album, because it took a while before it clicked, but when it really clicked for them. So they were away. And at this point, you know, Neil had a young family, so they had their families and girlfriends with them, except for Nick. Nick was flying solo, so Nick basically hung out with us the whole tour because he needed some fun. So yeah, we had a great time. We had an absolute riot with them. Yeah, and culminated with, we'd heard stories about them, you know, doing something to the opening act on the last show. So we got a heads up, and when they came out, because we kind of knew it was the last show, and we assumed they were gonna get us. We had, which was incredibly stupid and dangerous, but we had water guns hidden under our towels. So when they ran out during our set, we dropped our guitars, grabbed the water guns, and had at it. Which is kind of stupid considering we're all plugged in. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's all we can think of. But yeah, but again, just, you know, absolutely sweethearts and really beautiful people, and really, we were treated so well. I mean, we were very lucky. The Rush and Crowded House were the two big tours we did. We did another tour with Tears for Fears, did about six or eight shows with them, which was great too. So we're very lucky.
Yeah. And I did want to ask you about Tears for Fears. How'd you enjoy that experience?
It was great. It was a little weird that the two principals in Tears for Fears, I think at the time, were not getting along, or I think it was, yeah. So it was a little strange. We never met them, but the rest of the band, like they would sort of show up for sound check from different sides of the stage, and then they would leave. And so we never met them. So I'm sure they're great guys. I'm a huge fan. My favorite album, I think, of this year, one of my top 10, absolutely, is the latest Tears for Fears record.
Yeah.
It's absolutely. I think it's the best thing they've ever done. It's incredible. Their vocal performances are great, and the songs are fantastic. Anyway, but the band were beautiful. You know, they're musicians. They're great guys.
Yeah.
And, oh gosh, I can't think of the singer they had. This singer, and she played piano as well. Great American. I can't remember her name. She was a riot too. She was really, really great. So, yeah. I mean, we're touring around, you know, playing music for people, and they're clapping. I mean, how bad could it be, right?
Pretty good life.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome.
Pretty good
yeah.
life.
Yeah.
Chris, who is Chalk Circle's biggest celebrity fan?
Oh, I have no idea.
Has anyone come up to you?
I guess Justin Trudeau.
Yeah, I think
yeah,
so.
Yeah,
he probably I don't know. Qualifies.
Yeah. No, I have no idea. No idea.
Yeah. With of course, with the internet and social media, your music yeah. can go all around the globe. Is there any strange setting or geography or a weird airport where you did not expect this to happen and you got recognized?
No, not really. I had a funny moment after we split up where I thought someone was recognizing me, but they thought I was in Madonna's band. And when I told them I wasn't, they went, oh, and walked away. in Montreal. Anyway, that's here, neither here nor there. No, I can't think of anything. Sort of, I wasn't, you know, wasn't out and about a lot. The most unique place we played, it's different, but we played in East Berlin. We were there for about 10 days and played a music festival there. If you had said you're going to be playing inside the Iron Curtain at some point, I would have, you know, that was tantamount to saying you're going to be touring with Rush at some point, you know.
So, and you yeah. did them both.
Yeah.
How'd you end up playing in East Berlin?
Our German record label, Plana Records, was basically a communist record label, socialist, let's say. Bruce Coburn was signed to them. They had a lot of very left-leaning artists. So they had connections to, it was a youth, the festival was put on by the official youth communist party in Eastern Germany at the time, sort of. But artists like Billy Bragg and Michelle Schacht and, you know, very left-leaning artists were invited. And I guess they assumed we were very left-leaning. Our name as well, because Bertolt Brecht... is, you know, just he's you know, the godfather of theater and his political you know, the statements that his plays had made and stuff. I mean, I think the name also sort of helped. Like, oh my gosh, they named their, you know, their band after our you know, our native son. So, yeah. So that's how we got there. And yeah, it was pretty crazy. It was wild.
Well, the timing's pretty amazing because if I'm not mistaken, you played festival shows 1989, and this was 6 months prior to the collapse of the Berlin Wall.
Yeah, nobody saw that coming. Yeah, yeah. It was pretty, it was pretty wild.
It was kind of your Forrest Gump moment.
It was fascinating because it was incredibly locked down, you know, and quite shocking to be a part of. But I mean, not impossible to empathize with the people we met there, because of course we could leave, and our passports, mm-hmm. as it turns out, we basically had diplomatic status. We could go wherever we wanted, where, you know, they couldn't. We could leave if one of us wanted to go back to West Berlin and go partying one night and come back into East Berlin that night, we could, but they couldn't. It was quite surreal.
I want to ask about your label mates at Duke Records, Nash the Slash and his progressive rock band FM. Did you have any interaction with them?
No, never met them. I know Nash. I thought Nash was signed to Ready Records, but FM was signed to Duke Street, eh?
Yeah.
No, they were a little older than us. Like bands like, I remember hearing bands in high school like Rough Trade and FM, and they were all sort of 5 or 10 years older than us, I guess. They were pretty established when we were started trying to figure out how to play guitar. But Jane Sibbery, you know, got to work with her a little bit. Art Bergman, which was, I remember seeing Art in Vancouver just before he was signed to Duke Street. And Neo A4 guys we knew quite well. Yeah, they were sort of more of our, Scott Merritt was another one. Yeah, that was one of the reasons we were really excited to sign with Duke Street at the time, is their roster was just incredible, like some really fantastic musicians and artists, yeah.
One of the questions I got, Chris, when listeners heard you'd be coming on, is they did want to ask about your original keyboardist,
yeah.
Tad Winklars, and what's his status, if you know, and before being kind of replaced, Jason Snyderman came in since.
Yeah. Do you know what? I don't know. I don't know how Tad is. I haven't talked to him since 2006. We did that show at Lee's, and it was a great show. And I think Tad wanted the show to be, he wanted the band to get back together. And he's like, this is great. We're back. We're going to make records. And of course, I was a full-time, I had my own company, and I had family, and the other guys had family and were working. And I'm like, I'm not going to quit my job to start a band. And that for him was like, he really felt that going around and playing shows without creating something new and doing something, he wasn't interested in it. And I completely respect that, you know, So for us, it's been, you know, it hasn't been about creating new music like we were talking earlier. It's been about, you know, rediscovering ourselves as a band and performing and playing the music that we recorded years ago. That hopefully that will, like I said, we'll have some newer music soon, or, you know, and maybe record depending on whether or not it sucks.
I'm sure it will not.
But yeah, I hope he's doing well. But I haven't unfortunately talked to him. So.
I got two, I guess these are two different questions, Chris, but how has social media and music streaming affected Chalk Circle's music today?
Well, it hasn't really. I mean, music streaming is what it is. You know, lots of people can hear your music wherever they are in the world. And I'm not aware. I'm sure there are places in the world that have heard our music that didn't before, because back in the day, if you know, we never had a release or an album released in the States, for example. We've never been released in the States, but now someone from the US can listen to our music if they want. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't change anything. Like, you can't make any money selling records, which is what streaming is. It's sales. But as an artist, you never could make money selling records unless you were in that 0.5% that, you know, had multi-platinum sales. We had, you know, two of our albums, even our third one, I think, through attrition at some point, we did the math, went gold in Canada, right? Which you'd think would mean, you know, something. But we never made a penny on record sales. All of our money was made performing live, you know? And more recently, we've made a bit of money licensing some of our music to television shows and stuff. So it hasn't really affected us. I mean, the only thing with social media for us is if we have a show, we can tell thousands of people about it immediately. We don't have to make posters and run around the city we're playing in and put them up and try not to get stopped by the cops. So that's an advantage.
Certainly
yeah,
it is.
Yeah, yeah.
And Chris, what do you do today? Do you have an outside job, as they would call it?
Well, I was, up until recently, a partner at an audio production company, music company called Pirate Toronto. I'm still working freelance and still working, and I love working, so I'm going to continue to do that. But I left Pirate in January, which has been great, and I'm still making music. I've been, I have a label and publishing company that I've always had called Park Music, and I've been working with an artist called Transtar. I've been mixing Transtar's music and releasing singles, and we're hoping to release her second EP in January. And still making music, still hoping to play, hoping, you know, we tried to play a bunch of shows, as I was mentioning, with the Box, but unfortunately my back thought otherwise, but I'm healthy again, so yeah. Yeah,
and do you want to give us an update on your other bandmates, Brad and Derek?
They're doing great. They're, you know, they're living and working and the same. I think, you know, at this point in our lives, we want to be healthy and happy, and we want our families to be healthy and our families to be happy, and we want to be surrounded by family and friends. And so, you know, I think we're all blessed in that regard.
So, that's fantastic. That's what we all want. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Now, Chris, you've been great with your time. As we wrap up, I do want to ask what's going on? What's next? Do you actually have rescheduled shows for Chalk Circle, or what do you see coming in 2023?
We're doing a show in, see if I can tell you exactly. I know we have a couple of shows on the books right now in March. Yeah, we're playing a show in March, which is sort of an acoustic, intimate show. And then we're playing another show later on, which is, you were talking about this sort of 80s review. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's been announced yet. I think it's being announced the first week of December, but it's a 3-day festival. This incredible human is promoting it and asked us to participate. And we're really, really happy that we're doing the show. I can't really tell you more than that.
Hey,
Yeah.
We will eagerly wait for this breaking news follow-up. But
unless this is being broadcast after December. Yeah.
It's going to be broadcast tomorrow. So.
Oh, my gosh. Okay. Yeah.
But we'll keep it on the down low.
Yeah. And then hopefully we would love to play a lot next year. I mean, we're sort of a laissez-faire rock band. Like, none of us are – we don't have a manager. We don't have, like, an agent. We just sort of, like, you know, ask around, hey, do you need 45-minute opening set or somewhere, you know? So – we're hoping to be a bit more ambitious next year and do more shows. So, yeah.
Well, that's a great description. A laissez-faire rock band. That's great.
Yeah.
Chris, as we wrap up, where can we best follow you and Chalk Circle?
Best place to follow Chalk Circle, I guess, is on Instagram and probably Facebook. We also have chalkcircle.ca, which may be a bit more active because we're hoping to update that. It's you know, usually if you get to chalkcircle.ca, probably click on the Facebook link if you want actual information that's more recent than 10 years ago. Yeah.
Excellent. Well, we look forward to hearing more, and it sounds like we're going to get to hear you again play Chalk Circle in 2023. So I wish you continued success, Chris.
Thanks very much, Andrew, and congratulations on the podcast. It's fantastic. Yeah.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
All right. Take care.
And to the listeners, we thank you for listening to this episode of the Toronto Legends Podcast, powered by Henderson Brewing Company. And on behalf of Chris Tate, I am Andrew Applebaum, saying mahalo.
Come on a journey like no other, where you will discover many roads that will lead you to a happier, healthier, and more stress-free life. And the beauty is, you don't need any vacation time for this adventure. The journey will come to you. Join Avery Rich on your very own journey into yoga. Along the way, she will demystify yoga poses and guide you into a yoga posture or short sequence, all in less than 15 minutes. You have nothing to lose but stress. The Journey into Yoga podcast. It's not for people who like yoga. It's for people who don't like yoga. Follow or subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, or at averyrich.com.
I'm Andrea Askowitz.
And I'm Allison Langer. And we are the hosts of Writing Class Radio, a podcast, but we are so much more. We have writing classes. So if you are looking for live online classes where you can join a community, write to a prompt, get feedback, and get better, check out all our classes at writingclassradio.com and listen to our podcast wherever you get your podcasts and at writingclassradio.com.